It's Sportsnet 650. It is the playbook. Bick and Nizar, Jamie Dodd. Pleased to be joined with Luke Fox now. You can follow him on Twitter at Luke Fox Jukebox of Sportsnet. Luke, thanks for giving us some time here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So more dominoes are falling. You write in a piece about the RFA market, and it's changing, we hope, by the hour, because Brock Besser signs yesterday evening, and then we're waiting for, what, five more guys are pretty much the big five names leading the charge now.
Yeah, and we had Brandon Carlo sign this morning. Mm-hmm. So there's been a bunch in the last 48 hours, and I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that, and you hear it in the comments from Besser's agent today, a lot of it comes down to these guys want to be at camp. They don't want to miss games. So there might be a couple guys due to their situations or what's being offered that they take a harder stance and dig in their heels. But by and large, I think hockey players want to play hockey. And when it comes time for actual regular season games to be played, there's a pull there. They see all their friends and teammates being part of it. And it takes, you know, a pretty strong will not to go and join that, especially when you know that you're going to get a nice raise. You just might not get what you want. Mm-hmm. And the big payday could still come down the road, you know, especially in terms of what Besser did in terms of bridging. The big payday could come when you're UFA. So it's a pretty risky game to play if you want to stretch this past opening night and into the William Nylander-type territory.
Let's remove the negotiation process from this whole discussion for just a second, and looking at the contracts in a vacuum, the ones that have been signed, have any surprised you from where the numbers are, or does everything feel like it's gone the way it should?
There's a little bit of surprise. Like, I thought maybe Charlie McAvoy could have pushed for more. I mean, no one played more on that Bruins team in terms of ice time than he did. You know, in retrospect, you realize what they're doing is they're saving money now while they still have a lot of the veterans on bigger tickets. And then once those guys expire, then they can take a bigger swing at it and get paid later. But he was one guy that I got a firm sense that he wanted to be a Bruin for life, and the team wanted him for life, and they believed in him. So I was a little bit surprised that it came down to settling on a bridge. I mean, you can nitpick here and there. I do think the Leafs probably gave Marner a little bit more money than most people thought, especially considering he plays the wing and kind of reset the bar in terms of an RFA getting paid as a winger coming right out of his entry-level deal. But in exchange for that, he gave an extra year of term. He was really trying to get 5 years and get the Auston Matthews deal. So there are little things that are a little bit surprising. What I found interesting, more than surprising, is the guys who did bridge, how many of them loaded up on actual salary in the third year, which is kind of a smart play on the player's part, meaning that when that deal finally comes up for Besser or for Travis Konecny, these guys will demand a qualifying offer equivalent to that higher rate in their third year. And if they can't come to terms on something longer at that point, then the automatic will be they can just accept the qualifying offer and play their fourth year, last year of restricted free agency, at that higher rate. So I thought that was kind of a creative way for the players to ensure that they're kind of getting a fourth year out of these three-year deals.
Luke, you mentioned Charlie McAvoy's deal as being a little bit surprising, and I agree. And in general, it seems like teams are still wary of giving these young defensemen hitting their second contracts the same kind of term or money that they're giving to the young forwards. Is that just a case of it takes defensemen longer to develop, and teams aren't willing to take that kind of risk on them?
Yeah, I don't know why that's the case. I think in the Bruins' case, both their defensemen went short-term. I think it has more to do with their internal cap structure. But, you know, there's no denying it. You're right. The forwards are getting paid a little bit more this summer than the defensemen. And in my mind, it's a bit of a head-scratcher. I generally find, you know, defensemen, especially if you've identified a guy like McAvoy or Provorov or whoever, as this guy is going to be a top four defenseman for a long while, I don't see why you wouldn't really strive to lock them up for longer term, just because I think those guys are harder to find. Wingers are a little bit more replaceable. But you're definitely right. That seems to be a bit of a trend with the RFA class this summer.
Well, and you just look at it. I mean, look at the RFA market versus the trade market. I mean, if Charlie McAvoy was to hit the trade block, teams would be rushing to acquire this young right-handed top four defenseman. But then for whatever reason on the RFA market, the money just isn't there. Getting back to the forwards, and there's been comments just coming out today from Patrick Laine, speaking about not happy with how he's being used in Winnipeg, and that situation has been kind of boiling all summer. What resolution do you see happening between Line A and the Jets?
My best guess would be a bridge. I just don't think there's enough space on either side, and I think the organization is, you know, as much as they love his goal scoring, they're a little bit hesitant to commit, say, 6 or 7 years to a guy who still needs to round out his 200-foot game, needs to be better without the puck, needs to be more consistent. Sometimes you see his body language, and if he's in a drought, you can tell by just looking at him. But then, you know, other times he's on absolute fire, and you wonder if he's going to score 3 goals this game or 4. He's up and down. So I think the bridge is probably the common ground, and he's obviously, we have to be careful with quotes that are translated from over in Europe, but there's definitely a sense that he's frustrated with you know, his playing partners or his ice time and his own use. So usually when there's a rift that large, you'd think that the bridge is probably the best way to close it. I don't think it's to the point where the Jets are seeking a trade or anything like that. But I think you kind of bridge and hope the player matures and hope the team surrounds the player with a better fit and makes him feel comfortable. And, you know, you get this team on track, because the Jets are in tough. The Central is a race. And if they're still fooling around with Laine's contract or Kyle Connor's contract, they could slip behind, because they need that extra scoring, especially when you consider some of the D-men they lost over the summer.
Well, you mentioned that the interview he gave to a Finnish website, Finnish newspaper as well. It seems like that negotiation, more so than the other ones, has gone beyond just the okay, what is this player worth, right? Because it seems like Patrick Laine views it as, I should be a top-line winger, and I can give you more if you set me up to succeed.
Yeah, I think it is probably the most contentious of the bunch. I mean, we weren't hearing that kind of sniping from Mitch Marner or Brock Besser or some of these other guys. It is stands out as the most contentious. I mean, this goes back to a month ago when our colleague Chris Johnson spoke to Laine in Finland, and he said, I know I'm going to be playing, I just don't know where. And usually you don't hear comments that kind of flippant, even though he's only 21 years old. You don't usually hear that from star players. Usually they say all the right things and say, I want to be a Jet. My main goal is to be a Jet, and we're working on it. But he didn't say that. He didn't go that route. He kind of opened this door a crack and kind of gave us a peek into maybe things aren't so rosy. But I don't think it's something that can't be patched up. You know, I don't know if you caught Captain Blake Wheeler's sit down with another network, and he kind of admitted, extended a bit of an olive branch to Laine. He didn't use his name, but kind of admitted that maybe he had been a little bit harder on some of the young kids in the organization. I think there's been a realization that Winnipeg needs to, within that room and on the ice, work with this guy, because he's such an elite talent, and you don't just let a 40 goal scorer walk out the door because you can't work with him on other assets of his game or find a way to ingratiate him back into the group.
He is Luke Fox of Sportsnet joining us. All right, now that we're down to five, if I just had to give you odds of who is most likely to sign first, where are you placing your money?
Oh, I would say Braden Point. I think this is a really important year for Tampa. You know, he's fully on board with being a Lightning long term. The club loves him. He does everything you could ask for in a young centerman. I think that one gets done. They've already made the effort, as you guys know, by trading away JT Miller and Ryan Callahan. They're shedding salary. They're trying to make this work. Maybe this ends up being another bridge or a shorter-term deal. And maybe Tampa has to up their offer as an acknowledgement of what points accomplished there. But I just think after the way last season ended in that sweep after that fabulous regular season in Tampa, I don't think they want to enter the season with having one of their best players on the shelf because they can't get him figured out.
Luke, one of the players that's still unsigned that I'm a little bit surprised is still out there is Mikko Rantanen. Especially once the Marner deal got done, I expect it's only a matter of time. It just seems like such an easy fit because he is one of the – he's such a key player for that team, and they have so much cap space. What's your sense of where things stand with Colorado and Mikko Rantanen?
So the problem with that one is, yeah, you're right, not cap space. They're not in the space that the Jets and Tampa or Calgary are at. The problem with the Rantanen one is they have an internal structure that's kind of set by – one of the best bargains in the NHL in Nathan MacKinnon, who's only at $6.3 million. And I think they're worried that this 22-year-old winger, who's, you know, part of his success is due to playing with MacKinnon. Don't get me wrong, he's a fabulous player in his own right. But this guy, go ahead and make Marner money. You know, if he's getting 10 or 9, do you really want a player that's viewed as less valuable than MacKinnon making that much more than him? I don't think it. I think it would be hard to keep him under MacKinnon. I think that's an unreasonable ask. But I think they don't want to throw off their internal structure. And you look around the league at clubs that have done that well, and I'm thinking of Boston, and I'm thinking there's another one up Tampa. Tampa's done a really good job of that, of keeping Kucherov and Stamkos and Hedman. They all took a little bit less, and I know they have the benefit of being in Florida where there's no taxes, but they didn't have guys coming in blowing their cap structure out of the water. And Rantanen's had such a good past 2 years that he has the stats that he could do that. So I think that's where the battle lies in. We know we got to give this guy a monster raise, but we just don't want him raising our bar too high above MacKinnon.
It's Luke Fox joining us from Sportsnet. Luke, thanks a lot for giving some time here, and hopefully these deals get signed and we can talk about actual impact of how it looks on the ice.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch some more games. All right.